Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, it makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck or a pound,
a mark, a yen,
a buck or a pound is all that makes the world go round. That clinking, clanking sound can make the world go round. Money, 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 money.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dean Baker, who's the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, a progressive economic think tank in Washington, D.C. His books include Taking Economics Seriously, False Profits, that's P-R-O-F-I-T-S, Recovering from the Bubble Economy, and The Conservative Nanny State, How the Wealthy Use the Government to Stay Rich and Get Richer. He also writes the popular economics blog Beat the Press, and his latest e-book is The End of Loser Liberalism, Making Markets Progressive. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dean Baker.
Thanks for having me on, Ian.
And at the opening of the G20 summit in St. Petersburg, Russia, the host, Vladimir Putin, began the meeting by announcing that Syria was not on the agenda, which is focused on reviving the global economy, but he did allow that some talk about Syria may happen over dinner. So what's happening during the day?
Well, you know, obviously there is a big economic agenda. How much they're actually going to be doing on it, you know, remains to be seen. But, you know, most of the world is still mired in a slump. Europe more so than anyone. They haven't resolved any of the big issues with the Eurozone. So as a result of that, the Eurozone countries are flirting with recession. You know, they're very happy when they get any positive growth at all, which obviously they can do sometimes, but really not much to boast about. It's still not even clear that through their financial crisis, they still have a lot of banking problems. So Europe's kind of the big problem here, at least I should say the Eurozone countries, but it's not as though the United States has much to boast about. UK also, they've had three recessions now since the downturn. So you have a lot of issues trying to get the economy kick-started, trying to get it back going again. Obviously huge political obstacles to that. But you know, I imagine they'll be talking about it, what they come up with. I wouldn't expect much. They'll probably talk about a trade agreement, which is kind of a joke. I mean, it's not going to boost the economy. One could argue it's a good trade deal, but it's not going to lead to any qualitative boost to growth in any story.
But clearly that the host country, Russia, their economy is what I think 14th or 15th in the world in terms of GDP, and it's completely resource-driven, dominated by natural gas and oil, which is volatile. And the U.S., of course, is going to pass Russia, I believe, very soon as the world's biggest producer of natural gas, and in part due to this fracking mania that's underway. What's the sense of what Putin wants here?
It's not really that clear. I mean, he's done a lot of things. Obviously, the Snowden issue, you know, that certainly is pissing off the Obama administration. So it's not really clear that he expects very much. These are scheduled long in advance, and I'm sure if they were picking a destination for the G20 summit today, it wouldn't be the Soviet Union, given, you know, the hostilities over Snowden and also now Syria. So, you know, say, what does Putin expect from this? You know, obviously he's realistic. He knows that he's not been the favored leader for the United States or probably for most of West Europe at this point. So I really doubt he can expect very much in terms of any help in any economic concerns he has.
So what are the Chinese getting out of it? Their economy is slowing. What do they want?
I assume they want to keep their exports open. There have been protectionist moves in the United States and West Europe. They recently resolved an issue over solar panels in Europe, and I gather there'd been disputes with the U.S. as well, but I gather that the U.S. might follow along with that settlement. But China's, you know, is worried about preserving its markets here. I think that is the major issue for them. There's a lot of issues the U.S., of course, pushes with China. We're always trying to get more copyright patent protection for items there, more access for the financial industry. I imagine will continue that push. As I say, that's been ongoing. I don't know if they'll push China to raise the value of its currency. That would be something that would help the U.S., help boost our economy, because we need something to get our trade deficit down. That is how you do it. And if we don't get our trade deficit down, there's really not much prospect for the economy to get anywhere close to full employment, because you need something to fill that gap. We did that with the housing bubble in the last decade, and I don't think people want to go that route again. So that should be on the agenda, but I'm not sure that that it will be.
Again, I'm speaking with Dean Baker, who's the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, a progressive economic think tank in Washington, D.C. He also writes the popular economics blog Beat the Press, and his latest e-book is The End of Loser Liberalism, Making Markets Progressive. So given that the United States is the engine of the global economy, how does Obama put the best face forward here when the United States is hamstrung by Republican obstructionists, likely soon again to hold hostage the full faith and credit of the United States?
Well, I'm sure, you know, people have gotten used to not expecting that much out of the United States. So, you know, the U.S., Obama's not going to have a lot he could offer at this point. That's what I'm saying. I think they will make a big deal out of the trade agreements that they have on the table, with the idea that this is somehow going to lead to a huge amount of growth. They've been very effective in getting the media to write these stories, and it's really kind of laughable because, as I say, this isn't really an arguable point. I mean, we can argue whether they're net negatives or net positives, but no one could tell you with a straight face they're big net positives. That's just what Sarah Palin calls making stuff up. But they'll do it, and reporters at the New York Times and Washington Post will probably dutifully print it. So, you know, it's just kind of one of these silly things. You want to say you did something, so you go, oh, big trade deal, and then you'll get reporters at the major news outlets writing that up as though that made sense, when any economist from any side of the political spectrum can go, no, you know, even the ones that like it, I mean, they can't say with a straight face that this is a big deal because they know it's not.
Well, it's pretty obvious, I think, to any objective observer that you mentioned the British in their third recession, which is clearly due to austerity. And, you know, had we followed the deficit hawks in this country and the Republican Party's agenda, we would be in the same mess that they're in. You know, it's hard not to come to the conclusion that the Republicans are invested in an economic downturn in order to hurt this guy that they seem to hate almost irrationally, Barack Obama. So I'm just wondering, obviously he's not going to say anything because he needs their vote over this Syria thing. Do you think that the same people who've been sabotaging the economy and doing and are probably going to do another, you know, over the debt ceiling, they're probably going to again, you know, threaten to tank the entire economy and have another one of their Tea Party tantrums? Do you think that there's any way in the world that Obama's going to get these people to vote for him for his war in Syria?
A real good question. Obviously, they will be working hard to do that. You know, an analogous vote was back in 2008 when you had the TARP. There are a lot of, you know, that's before the formal Tea Party, obviously, that followed Obama's election. But you had a lot of conservative Republicans, populist Republicans, if you want to use that term, that voted against it. And, you know, the first time, of course, it went up for vote, it went down. And then the leadership in the Republican Party really got the, you know, whip out, and they were able to round up the votes they needed to pass the bill. They could try that again. I mean, the leadership has a lot of power. They often control the money going to candidates. And, you know, Boehner said he's on board. He will be pushing for it. So I'd put it about 50-50. You know, if we're up to the public, I mean, you know, congressperson, you know, there have been a number of reports from a number of districts. No one said the opposite, that, you know, the calls, the emails they're getting, they're 10 to 1 or more against. So that's really, you know, the public, the people following this issue are almost without exception opposed to the intervention. So if people vote their district, then they're going to be voting against the intervention. But, you know, again, the leadership, President Obama, clearly will be putting a lot of pressure. And, yeah, I'm not – this is my area, but I might guess, you know, just as someone does follow it, obviously, it's somewhere around 50-50.
And in terms of where we stand vis-a-vis the debt ceiling, apparently the Treasury Department has done everything they can to hold off the day of reckoning here. And I think it's sometime in October now, isn't it?
That's the date they're putting on it. And there are two things here. One is there's always going to be genuine uncertainty in the sense that it depends on the timing of tax receipts. And, you know, they can't control that. I mean, they know when people are supposed to pay their taxes, when they typically pay them, but that varies year to year. So they don't know that exactly. So there is some genuine uncertainty that way. The other thing is that they do have how much they could paper things over is to some extent indeterminate, which is not to say that they're making stuff up. It's just that, you know, they have a certain number of tricks, and at some point they literally run out of tricks. When Lou is saying that he thinks he can get till mid-October, I'm not sure that that means if he pulls every last trick he has. So I wouldn't treat that as necessarily a hard and fast deadline. It's probably, you know, it's one since he's put it out there. He wants people to think it's a hard and fast deadline. But as I say, I just don't know that's necessarily the case.
Well, we know that even if they don't hold the full faith and credit of the United States hostage, they're certainly going to try and defund Obamacare. That seems to be the fallback position. So whatever happens, it's not going to be good for the U.S. economy.
Well, it's not going to be helpful. I mean, my guess is that at the end of the day, they will come to an agreement because, you know, if you really do get to the point where we risk not making a payment on government debt, there'll be serious repercussions, and the people who would feel that most immediately are the Wall Street people, and they'll be very upset. Mm-hmm. So I think there'll be an awful lot of pressure on members of Congress to come to a deal if we actually come close to a deadline. The other part of that story, of course, was if you go back to 2011, the politics didn't work out well for them. The Republicans were blamed overwhelmingly, and I think that's probably going to be more the case today, especially if they make it clear that their demand is repealing President Obama's health care plan, because even though a lot of people have reservations about it, a lot of people don't understand it, they don't know what it means, at this point, people want it. They want to get it, you know, they want to go through it. It was passed by Congress, you know, they... Supreme Court ruled on it, and, you know, it's just a few months down the road.
Got to get over it already, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't think they want to go to the wall on that one.
Sure. I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Again, I've been speaking with Dean Baker, who's the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research at Progressive Economic Think Tank in Washington, D.C. His books include Taking Economics Seriously, False Profits, Recovering from the Bubble Economy, and The Conservative Nanny State, How the Wealthy Use the Government to Stay Rich and Get Richer. He also writes the popular economics blog Beat the Press, and his latest e-book is The End of Loser Liberalism, Making Markets Progressive. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the upcoming elections in Australia.
Back in the USSR.